This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Tech, show number 118, recorded on May 23rd, 2013. Here on Home Tech, we cover all your favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska, and we post the show with the world-class show notes, although not as world-class with me doing them as when Andrew was, but out at the AverageGuy.tv. If you have questions or comments, even contributions you'd like to send in, you can contact the show, send me an email. podcast@theaverageguy.tv, although that's not the most effective way to do it. I'll tell you how to do that here in just a second. You can also find me on Twitter at Jay Collison or follow the show schedule on Twitter at TheAverageGuyTV. You can also join us for live chat during the show over at TheAverageGuy.tv live. If you're listening to the recorded version of this or the version that we put on YouTube, join us on Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out at TheAverageGuy.tv live. And right next to that window over there is live chat. We also have the YouTube video that you can watch as well when we are done. And so thanks for joining us who have downloaded it, and thanks to everyone who is watching us live. All right, we got a busy evening. A couple things I want to get out of the way. One is to let you know that we are doing a $100 Amazon giveaway. So if you need 100, who can't use 100 Amazon bucks? So hang on. At the end of the show, we'll talk about how you win those Amazon bucks. I mentioned just a minute ago that if you wanted to get contributions or ideas into the show, you could send me an email. You know what? No one's ever done that. The way that people do it is on Facebook. So if you go to facebook.com/groups/theaverageguy, I'm sorry, The Average Guy TV. I should know that. Let's just make sure that's the right one. You always get that mixed up with YouTube. All you got to do is join us over there. So that's a closed group, so you got to ask to join us when you get over there. But facebook.com/group/theaverageguy. Ask to join in, and then that's it. Once you're in, you'll automatically be added into the contest. And once you do that, we'll draw the names out and get that done. So if you want to do that, jump over there. The conversation is going on over there right now, and we might even mention a few of those conversations that are going on. You can get info about how to get, at least how to get info to me about future shows to me that way. We just wrapped up a series on laptops last week. Before that, we were talking about home networking. Starting next week, we're going to do a whole series on virtualization. So if you want to come on and listen about maybe how to virtualize some of the environments that you have there in the home, we'll talk about that from a home angle. So you might want to join us starting for the next 2 weeks. Those are on, and then we will have a special show. Christian and I are going to talk with the guys from Vigo, VGO.com. So VGOCOM.com. They're going to be on the show on June 13th. You might want to join us for that. All right, let's get the guys introduced here real quick, and then we'll dig right in with some content. All the way to the left, and he joins me every week. He's a fresh graduate and basking in his glory, Christian Johnson. Christian, how are you?
I'm doing well, indeed basking a little bit and relaxing a lot, and 9 days till I fly out. So it's been good to finally get through the long haul and run through the finish line. So
yeah, you're done. Congratulations. Yeah. Got a chance to watch that on live stream. Why wouldn't I watch your graduation on live stream? That was very cool to be able to see that. And congratulations again.
Thank you.
On getting all the way through. Yeah, it's been fun to watch you do it. About 9 days, you're going to be in Langley doing some NASA stuff, and we'll catch you on that end, and hopefully get some really good podcasts from you from NASA for the summer, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, very cool. Then all the way to the right, and my buddy from the Home Server Show, and we try to bring him on about every 4 weeks or so to talk Windows Home Server and anything else he wants to talk about, John Zadler. John, how are you?
Hey, Jim. Hi, Christian. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, you bet. Always good to have you. John, it's a special milestone day. Not necessarily today, but tomorrow. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Yeah, and also you're getting to that same milestone there, so happy birthday to you.
That's right. I'm just a few years behind you, not too many, but you and I share birthdays that are very close, and so happy birthday to you. And Christian, when's your birthday?
A long time from now.
Oh, okay, so we didn't miss it. Good. All right.
That's
good.
You missed it. It was just a long time ago you missed it.
All right, well, that's not good. I guess I need to figure out when your birthday is so I don't miss it. John, we're going to start with you. I know we want to dig in a little bit on the home server side. We haven't talked to you in about 3 or 4 weeks from the last time you were digging in. I know that the last time we talked to you, you were talking about trying to get Windows Server 2012 Essentials hacked onto your Western Digital DX4000, and I think you've made a little progress on that since we talked to you last.
That's right. Yeah, I've been in our forums. I wanted this guy, T.S. Walker. He also has a DX4000. He's over at the Western Digital, their site. They have a forums for their support forum for their product. So he was over there, and some guys were asking, what's the upgrade path for these DX4000s that have Windows Storage Server 2008 R2? Will they be supporting Server 2012 Essentials? And there's some rumor that a box might come out. But then the thing is, it's like, that little box, like we were saying last time, it's a Atom D525.
Right.
So, is it going to be able to do some of that work? You can say, maybe you could do some Active Directory, give out some IP addresses, do some stuff like that. But, I wouldn't suggest getting it to do all, too much heavy lifting. So I guess maybe for a small office, and it's like, let's see how that works. Let's see if Western Digital can get it on there. Because one thing I like about Western Digital is with the storage server that they have on there now, they have support for Apple Time Machine Backup that they added. So this is not something that Microsoft added. So just like HP had a couple of little bells and whistles, so did Western Digital on their box. So maybe when they come out with the 2012 Essentials version, they might tweak it a little bit. Because the other thing that HP did was, Western Digital did, was they actually turned off the option to back up the hard drives. Because remember in the Colorado products there, if you have a 2 terabyte maximum of the shares that you can back up, so it became a bit of a, people were a little bit confused, how they do it. So these guys, Western Digital, since it's like one big RAID array, a RAID 5, they disabled that feature to be able to back up the shares. So maybe they might find a little tweaks around that, that way for the Server 2012 Essentials. So we'll have to see. But in the meantime, what's interesting is trying to get that version of Server on this box, because it is a headless box. And one of the easiest things, like at the home server show, when some of these guys are trying to get the Windows Home Server and even 2012 Essentials and any one of those server products on the MediaSmart servers, which are headless, one of the easiest ways to do it is to, you actually take the system drive, you put it in any PC or whatever, you just pull out your PC. Because what happens with the server, it's not necessarily, the product is not necessarily...
No. See if John comes back. Christian, do I still have you?
You do.
Okay, good. He just locked up. He must have started a server.
Apparently.
If you're listening, we're waiting for John to come back. He will probably come back here and chat in just a second. In the chat, I just put a link to what we're talking about. You might not be as familiar with the Western Digital Sentinel. It's a DX4000. It's a box we saw about 2 years ago out at CES. They retail, the link I put in chat, and I'll put in the show notes as well, retail the 4 terabyte version of that. So you basically can buy it all outfitted with Western Digital drives, and it uses really nice. It's not your standard hard drives that it puts in there. Kind of puts enterprise grade drives in there. About $765 for a 4 terabyte box, but it's running Windows Server storage server. I think it's 2008 storage server. And so it's not your traditional NAS in the sense that it's like a QNAP or a Synology box or even a Drobo, where they have their own kind of proprietary OS. This is running a Windows OS. John, as John was mentioning, across the front of it is just an LED screen. And so when he says headless, it's kind of headless. It's kind of not. At least you get some you get some information back on this little LED screen that's on there. They could have spent a little more money on that screen, to be honest with you.
I remember when he did that mod for the EX45, I think, where he put like a small LED on the front.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just gave some pretty basic stats.
Yeah, and that's what this does. It tells you what the IP is, and it gives you enough information to be able to run the box. Christian, have you guys used any NAS, traditional NAS stuff? Or I know, you know, you're big Windows, you know, server users right now. Any of those NAS boxes in the house?
Yeah, no NAS boxes. I mean, the closest we've ever gotten to it was like way back when Linksys used to make like these storage hubs. But I mean, with our multi-RAID systems that we have set up, there's really no purpose for us at this point.
Sure.
Just because it's so cheap to, you know, they're selling 4 terabyte drives on Newegg now for like $149 that you can just pop right into your RAID array and be done with. So storage really isn't a limitation anymore.
Yeah, it's become a commodity, right?
Yeah.
From that standpoint. So
for sure.
Sounds like John might be coming back here to join us in just a sec. We'll see if we can get him back. Hey, John, just locked up a little bit. Can you? You might be muted.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. We went back just a little bit and covered the DX4000. Just for anybody who wasn't aware of that box, you know, that has not. You know, I'm surprised Western Digital is still making it. To be honest with you, it has not. Although you're in the forums for that, is there quite a bit of activity around that box?
No, not at the home server show forums. Like more
in their own forums.
Their forums. There's a little bit of work on there. It's a bit of. It's a nice box. I'm glad that they came out with the server, but because they're sort of like on the drives are on the expensive side, that box, like right out the gate, it's about $2,000. So, you know, you're getting a server OS, but it's a small little box. The drives are, they're top of the line hard drives, you know, but for a little box to kind of get going, you know, that's for, you know, some guy who wants have a nice little office with, you know, really good equipment. And in a way, you know, has some money to spend on it. But if you're just trying to have a little business and you're counting your pennies, that might not necessarily be the way to go.
Yeah, I mentioned the link I put in chat is for a 4 terabyte box that right now is retailing for about $765. So not terrible, but I mean, certainly you're going to put down a chunk of change to get a little bit of storage for sure.
Yeah, because the thing is, what's nice about the DX4000 is it's a turnkey operation, right? They'll give you like the two terabyte version, which is actually two terabyte drives in a mirror. But then you can get that a unit with 3 terabyte drives, or even some units support 4 terabyte drives. So you can go and order one that has 4 4-terabyte drives. So right out the gate, you're talking 16 terabytes. Of space, and you know, then that one is that's quite pricey.
Yeah, that's so, like $1,800 at this point for 16 terabytes.
So what's the advantage?
Well, the advantage of buying it like that is that it's good to go right out the gate. You know, you don't have to get an IT guy to start installing the server. Whereas, you know, if you bought it yourself a microserver, you know, there's no OS, but you're talking a microserver is only $250. You know, then you got to get the your IT guy to install it. Who knows? Sometimes these guys will charge you, you know, $500-$600 to install it. Whereas with the DX4000, you know, you got the two drives. Maybe like Jim says, maybe $800 unit. You plug it in, turn it on, install the connectors. They have their support. They add their add-in for what do they call it? Their Western Digital like type of protection. You know, if the drive fails or they have some support, you can actually click on the link if the server is giving you trouble. Because one of the things in server. Because you know how you have the view alerts. You can actually send them the alerts. So then they can look at that and say, okay, you know, here's where your problem is. And so you have 1 year of support that's included in the price of the box. So I think it's got some nice things. But again, right out the beginning, from this onset, you have to spend a couple of bucks to get it going. But I like the box. And it's
what's
got
it running? Sorry? What's the OS? What is it running?
So it's running a server storage, Windows Storage Server 2008 R2 Essentials. That's a long name.
Yeah, that is a lot. So, thank you, Microsoft.
Yeah, that's the one with the 25 users. You can add the server to a domain. It's got the media stuff in it, so the web browser and all of that stuff is going behind there. So that's a nice thing. When I connect it to my media center, my TV, I can go to the server and, you know, grab all my media content, or from the browser, you know, remote web access. From offsite, you can go to it. And Microsoft did a little bit of a nice. They give you a little bit of eye candy when you kind of go into your media. You look at your pictures, videos, and stuff like that. So they give you a bit of a splash screen. So they got that going for them.
John, you, in this case, well, let me remind folks, first, if you've, a bunch of folks from YouTube have just joined us. So if you're watching on YouTube, you came over on Google Plus, that's fine. Stay on YouTube if you want, but if you head over to theaverageguy.tv/live, first, maybe first time you've come in here, head over there. There's actually, we have live chat going on, and there's a bunch of folks out there chatting. So you can join us, theaverageguy.tv/live. John, Kevin Schoonover says that one of the things here, the DX400 supports iSCSI. So I know some folks are looking for some iSCSI, maybe some easy iSCSI support, or it becomes an iSCSI target, right? So have you used it in that capacity at all on your network?
Yeah, I did try. I did use that to connect my daughter's Mac, because like I said before, and that was just a recent update that Western Digital added. Their previous build, there was no iSCSI target that you could set up. Now when you go and download the latest, and even if you have the older version, you can just download the. It's either the software is like a firmware update, or you could just get the whole new ISO and then reinstall. That's a bit of work to get that going, but yeah, you can set it up as an iSCSI target, and then now your Mac computers will see it, and away you go. So like I said, there's some nice eye candy and some extra functionality that Western Digital added to that box.
All right, very cool. Well, as we wrap up a little bit of that, let's welcome Andrew Morris. Andrew has been the busiest man on the planet with two little ones at home. It looks like he doesn't have them at the moment. Andrew, how are you? Can you hear us? And are you off mute? Oh, you're still trying to. He's giving me the universal, don't come to me yet, I'm not ready. Well, Andrew, jump in on the conversation when you're ready. You'd have to see that. You have to be watching the video. If you're watching the audio only, you have to be watching the video to see that. So, Andrew, welcome. Jump in when you are ready, all right? You've done a few of these. I think you can do it. John, what else do you got for us?
The other thing I wanted to cover was recently. Well, I've been following the Office Maven, which is Mike Craven, and he's got a couple of apps that he had them for their Windows, basically their Windows Office. You install the Office suite on your server, and then you access it through a remote desktop connection. So you can either be off-site and go through the web, or you can be at one of your workstations. And so instead of having actually Office installed on your PC, the Office is installed on the server, and you connect like that. So everybody in your household or in your business will connect to the installation that's there. So he's got like an Office add-in. He's got a Quicken add-in. He's got QuickBooks. And his latest one is a remote. It's a remote remote added. And basically, what that one does is on your server. Let's say you want to install something like Photoshop. So what happens is you install Photoshop on your server, and then through the console on your PC, you'll go to that app and you'll say, "Okay, I want to publish an app." And it says, "What app do you want to publish?" It's going to give you a list of programs that are on the server. So you would say, Photoshop, or yeah, in this case, Photoshop. You say Photoshop. Now what happens is it'll actually create now a Photoshop link in the launch pad, and then it'll also create a Photoshop link in your web, on your remote web access. So you could be, let's say, at work, and you log into your server from work, and in the web page, you'll see your app. You can log in, and his add-in will give you a link to whatever program you've added. You know, it could be SharePoint, it could be whatever apps that you have installed on your server. It'll make that available. You know, like he says, it's publishing. It makes it available to you either on your PC or remotely. So that's a great app.
John, it is $100, right?
Yeah.
Andrew, sorry, Andrew, try that again. You're breaking up.
Ouch, that's an expensive add-in.
Well, but you can use it for you can basically install anything into it, right?
Yeah, like, there's a lot of work. Like in the remote web, this particular add-in, I think it's more expensive than some of the other ones, because it has a lot of this extra functionality. Where see the Office add-in, for instance, you have a version that gives you just like a Outlook. What is it? Outlook, PowerPoint, Word, and Excel. So now it creates a remote, like your web pages for that. But then it doesn't, like, in a way, the app doesn't like continue to grow. It's got those functionality for those four programs, but the remote app This one is like you go in there and you have to say, okay, you can add any program. You say, I want the like I said, Photoshop. I want this. I want that. I want this. So it has to now create the web pages. It has to have all the smarts, the functionality to be able to add a link for that into the launch pad. It has to add it into the dashboard and it has to add it into your web interface. So that one's a bit of a fancy one.
So is that using Terminal Services Gateway effectively or similar type of deal? Or?
Yeah, that type of deal. And it makes it very very nice. Let me see if I can screen share. Hold on.
It's bringing some corporate tech through to the home user. Gotta love that.
At least the power user anyways, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, John, I'll bring up your screen here so it's full. Oh, full screen doesn't seem to be working. Oh, there it goes. Okay. We see you seeing us.
Okay. Do you see this Launchpad ad in here?
Yeah, you bet.
Okay. See, so now when I click on Launchpad, I have Windows Home Server Remote, Office, and Quicken. See, if I go to Quicken, it'll just give me the option to run the Quicken app. In this case, I don't have Quicken installed on the server. Let me see if I go to Office.
Oh, so you installed the add-in, but you didn't install Quicken. You have to install Quicken one time for it to work. Yeah. Okay.
Just like if you use his QuickBooks add-in, you have to install QuickBooks on the server, and then you use his add-in and then interfaces to that. So if I select, let's say, Excel here, it says, please close the Windows Mobile dashboard and try again. Okay. Close that one. So now in this case, I installed Office 2013 on my server. So now it's going to open a little box here. See, so now it launches, if you can see that, it launches Excel.
Yep.
See, so,
oh, yeah.
So I'm running Excel on my desktop, but Excel is actually on the server. So now I can go and it gives me a little warning.
And John, we've talked about this before from a licensing standpoint, right? You're buying one license and deploying it with the ability to deploy it up to 25 different workstations, right?
Yeah.
Is that a problem?
Microsoft may have a view on it.
Well, but certainly Mike has been around. I mean, this isn't the first go-around for Mike Craven. I mean, we talked about the first version of this out on 2011, you know, a year and a half ago. And think if Microsoft was interested in shutting this down, they had to shut him down a long time ago with a cease and desist. I mean, this is, and he's selling it for $100.
Could be volume.
In what sense?
The volume might be not enough to impact him.
Oh, yeah, maybe so. But still.
I mean, if you're only serving this out of the home, then realistically, you're going to have what, maybe 3 or 4 users. I think if you're running a small business server, you're probably going to be licensing the product in its entirety anyway.
This is on 2012 Essentials, which is really, you know, targeted towards the business user for the most part.
Yeah, so, true.
I mean, we're going to use it as enthusiasts, absolutely, but I don't know. We keep bringing this up, and Drashna out in chat has said he's been doing it since version 1. I know we've been talking about it. John's brought it up several times in the years we've been talking about that, and he keeps doing it, so I guess it's okay. I guess.
I know. Everywhere I've got an Essentials box running, they pay for the full WAC licensing.
Yeah. What meaning? What?
So if they're using, say, a Microsoft, say if they're using Office on top of Essentials, then they're paying for, you know, 5 licenses or 6 licenses.
In other words, you're saying they're paying for the Office licenses that way.
Yeah. Yeah. The impact of getting a Microsoft audit and having to pay for the slap over the wrist is, you know, outweighs the cost of the license.
Yeah, well, maybe so. It's just, I guess since it's okay, I mean, since they haven't shut them down yet, I guess from a licensing standpoint, it doesn't really matter that much. He is selling this. So, John, the remote app version is 100. The remote app 2012 Plus is 175. That gives you up to 25 users and unlimited remote apps. And then the Office 2012 actually sells for just $75. So,
yeah, because if you see in this window I have here, it's written Windows Home Server Office Launcher. As you see, you have Excel, OneNote, Outlook, PowerPoint, and Word. Then the Plus version, it adds Access, InfoPath, Lynx Server, Microsoft Lynx, Microsoft Project, which is, I think, that I don't know how much Microsoft sells that software for.
Yeah, it's a couple hundred bucks. Yeah.
Then you have Publisher, and Visio, again, is another expensive one.
But you have to have all those installed on the server.
Yeah, see, in this case, I plug this one in, and it, I click on it, and it says Visio is not available.
Right. You would need the Pro, I forget which version of Office has all those products available on it. You would have to have that installed to make that work.
Yeah, well, the license I have is like Office Premium, Office 2013 Premium. Like, this will work on Office 2013 and Office 2010. So the one I have includes a Publisher, and the only ones it doesn't include is the it doesn't include Project and Visio. Project and Visio are separate, but I think you get the SharePoint interaction, SharePoint, the Lynx, InfoPath Access. You get those ones. So anyway, it's a lot. I mean, a lot of work went into this app there. So I really like it. I enjoy it, and I'll show you the a quick look at the other app, which is the remote app. Let me close these windows. Now let me see if I install that one properly. Ah, look at that, eh? Avast wants to get in.
Uh-oh. Avast wants to get in on the business.
I've asked to say it. Show me the money. let me see.
So when you access it from the public internet, John, how does it look? Do you still come in through the remote app launcher, or do you come in through the web page? And does it publish the icons out to the web interface?
Yeah. That's exactly it. It puts it out on the web, on their web, on your website. So when you log into your site, let me see if I'll be able to get that on. See, like, you know, in this case, I've added Windows Media Center Master and Rich Copy. You see? Okay. So what happens is you go in the dashboard, and then you say I want to publish an app. It says which one, and then again it gives you, you know, your hard drive, SQL and backslash, whatever. You point to the one you want and you add them. So now if I click on them, I would have access to them. Let me just see if I can open up the web browser here.
John, while you're doing that, Christian, have you guys installed many add-ins in your environment?
Really, Lights Out is like the only essential one for us. And I think that's just because I would say really the only other one that I'd still be on the lookout for is some kind of add-in to do some really nice, straightforward data sanitization in terms of meta and tagging and cleaning up duplicates. But really, besides having the need to wake up and monitor power on different computers, there haven't been really many other add-ons that appealed to me that gave some great functionality that isn't already there.
Yeah, so pretty stripped down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Andrew, do you run anything? Any add-ins? Do you have a home server running right now?
I'm still running a busted version 1. My version 1 has decided to go into the whole unable to back up its clients, and it's annoying the hell out of me, and I just haven't got the time.
Yeah, you've been a little busy with some children.
Yeah, and probably the inclination at the moment to even look at it. If I spend too much time looking at it, it's probably going to go out a window. So,
maybe you should back it up and then do something different along those lines. John, were you going to try and show us something on the web there? We've missed the Hawaii 5.0 theme over the last couple weeks, Andrew. Did you want to bring up that webpage, John?
Yeah, I'm just logging in, and it's a little slow.
So do you need to take that, Andrew? Oh, he's talking on the phone. Okay.
He ain't asking you for permission.
No, he just muted himself, and he's on the corporate call. We have to. We'll remind folks that if you're listening, Andrew is in Melbourne, Australia. Of course, it's noon. It's the noon hour there right now. We're about 8:30 Central Time here in the United States. And we get Andrew over his lunch break, so he's to join us that way. All right, John, what do you got for us?
Okay, so if you can see here, do you see the screen? Yeah.
Yep, I got it up full screen, you bet.
Okay, I got one of these where I logged in, and so now I have my one of the add-ins I installed is Windows Home Server Office. So I see the Office here. I see the Office Launcher. I see Word. I see Excel. And then I can say, you know, the other apps, and then a box will pop up, and it'll give me, like in this case, you know, Launch, a Quick and PowerPoint Project, SharePoint Workspace. So it, you know, I can go in and pick any one I want. So I could be remote, right, and log into that and get these guys, these options. Then the other one is this Quicken add-in. And here is the one that we were playing around with, is the remote add-in. See, so here I've added Rich Copy, and then I've added Media Center Master. So now I could connect to them. See, so these are apps that I install on the server, and I could be at work, and they could be whatever apps I want, and then I connect to it, and then it'll open it on the... you know, on my PC. So
yeah.
Do you want to open it? Do you want to connect? Yes. Hopefully, I won't have no password problems.
Now, I imagine trying to watch media across something like this wouldn't be very good, right?
Well, the thing is, they have the built-in... what's going on? Oh, yeah. See, now the launcher open. Now it's opening a connection. So do you want to connect? The first time you kind of connect to it, you know, you'll get a bunch of those Microsoft warnings and all of this,
right.
And then the consecutive when you go see now it's going to try and do some update.
Yeah.
But
no, yeah, I think we get the idea.
Yeah. So if we go back to the, I don't have the media. Oh, it's true. This is the version of this is Windows Small Business Server, so you don't have the one for the you know the remote web access where it gives you, you know, pictures, music, and videos. Would have a nice big square over here, right. And then you could just go and get some fancy stuff. So that's about what I'm going to cover there.
All right. No, that's fairly interesting. I have not I haven't done much. I'll be honest with you. I've not done even, you know, I run Windows Home Server 2011, and I use it all the time. It backs up my PCs. I use it a ton for file storage, you know, file services, storing. Use CrashPlan to rip that stuff up to the cloud. And it's rock solid for me, but I don't even have it connected to do remote access to it.
Oof.
I don't have any need. I have other ways of getting a hold of my files if I need them. Partly because, Christian, I store, so inside of my Windows Home Server file directory, is embedded my cloud storage stuff. So Dropbox, SkyDrive, those all sit inside. So if I'm somewhere outside, I can just get those files, the ones I need, I can get off Dropbox or I can get off SkyDrive. Or
whatever. Yeah, but if you already have Home Server set up for remote file access, why do...
Yeah, because it's, for whatever reason, it's just easier for me that way to do it. Just the way I've set it up. I've never gone back in and set up the remote services.
Yeah, I run own cloud on our home server, which essentially lets you create your own Dropbox server, and then you can just set up what data directories from home server you want to be a part of that. And so I get file sync just like the Dropbox sync client between all my devices that are on the own cloud. So I really like that because you still have the easy functionality of the public link sharing when you want to send stuff to people, and you still get synchronization between computers when you want to sync files locally to the disk for whatever reason, and you still maintain the data on your own platform.
Yeah, I don't know how I've made it this far, and I've never heard about own cloud, but this. How is it I've known you for 3 years, Christian, and I never heard about this?
Because I've just recently set it up.
Oh, okay.
yeah, this is like maybe last month I
set it up. Oh, okay, so it's fairly new.
Yeah, and it's basically the guy who developed it saw the need for an open source free PHP-based system, and it's really quite comprehensive, and it has all the features. It was a little bit weird when I first set it up, ran into a couple of strange things, but then I went out and actually got the latest version of the installer, and it worked fine. So that being said, it's really nice integration to put that, get that running on home server, and then you're essentially you know, rocking with your cloud style stuff without sucking your data out.
Well, it's basically the same as like using Dropbox or Box or SkyDrive on your server, in the sense you're just coming to this and it has rights and access to your data on your home server, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Very cool. So is this fairly new or?
They've been around for a while, I think, but it's just starting to really pick up popularity, I think, I would say, because they're on version 1.25 is their latest client. Their latest server version is version 5, so they've definitely been doing it for a while. But
and do you put the server version on your server, or yeah. Do you put the client version on your server?
No, you put the server version on your server.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I just think, like with Box and Dropbox, I just use the client version, right? And installs and does its thing.
Well, because Box and Dropbox are, their servers are the Dropbox servers, whereas your home server is your.
So this isn't synchronizing with the cloud. This is just creating a tunnel out that you can access, right?
It's making your home server the cloud.
Okay. Yep.
And your cloud is internal.
Got it.
And then that's giving you the ability to do public link sharing and synchronization and all that good stuff.
So the address that you use, don't give away your address, but the address that you would use if I were to install this on my server, I'm outside of my network, what address would I use to get back to this?
Blah, 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 .remotewebaccess.com.
Okay. .remotewebaccess.
Yeah, that's the new, that's like the .homeserver.com extension for 2012.
Okay. Oh, so you're piggybacking on top of the 2012 web apps piece, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Very cool. John, have you seen that before? I know, Andrew, you chimed in and said you'd maybe looked at that a while back. John, had you seen that before?
Yeah, I think we spoke about it in a show about 6 months ago, didn't we? Briefly.
Oh. I'm that old. Yep, that just happened. I don't know. I can't remember. This seems to me like this is the first time I've seen this, but this is pretty cool.
I think my brother mentioned it to me, and I go, oh, not another one.
Yeah, well, interesting in the sense that it creates kind of that open access to your, you know, to your own cloud. And there's so much of that going on right now. Just trying to keep up with the cloud storage guy that I've been putting together. They're changing all the time. I mean, amounts and sizes and offerings, that seems to be the real popular thing to do, which is cloud storage. So that's cool.
Yeah. The other thing I was kind of playing around with recently was the Synology app. You know, apparently the software, the Synology software, is open source. So some of these guys, they installed, because the Synology boxes are a bit on the expensive side. You know, so some people are asking, you know, should they get into, you know, buy themselves a Synology box and go with that way, which is a nice, it's a nice solution to try. But some guys, they say, well, I don't want to drop $500 or $700. So here, this gives them a bit of an option that you can try, let's say, you can install the software on a micro server. And that's what some guys are doing on this website. And it was funny because I found those guys. Christian, I think it comes back to being your fault.
Why is it always my fault?
It's your fault, Christian. Because I was kind of looking who is asking for the BIOS update for the microserver, which is, you know, you were the instigator in that one.
Oh.
And this site popped up. So I went to that site and I said, you know, what are these guys using it for? And sure enough, it's they're using the version I think it's DSM. What's that called for their
Station Manager?
Okay. And there you go. Thank you. And they're installing that software on the microserver, and they're trying to see if the eSATA port works, and you know how to get that the SATA port and the eSATA port working, and all of this stuff. So they were linking to home server site to try and get the drivers and to update that. So one of the things. So that's what I said. I'll give that a try. I'll just throw in a 500 gig drive into my microserver, and that OS basically it's only like a few hundred meg, and you boot it off a USB stick. What's nice about the microservers, you know how you can open the door, and right inside there, there's a USB slot, so you just plug that guy in, your USB key, and you boot up. It boots off that USB key, and away you go. You have your four drives and your hard drives, and now you got a Synology going, so you can play around with that and use. You know, Synology has a lot of nice add-ins for, you know, clouds. There, you'll basically use it as like a cloud storage box. You can install Media Server. You can install Plex. You can install you can set it up as a DNS server. So you know they have all. It's a bit like add-ins, like how Home Server kind of does it. You go to their site and you say, these are the add-ins I want to install, and you install, and you kind of, you know, and then you go off and you set up the box, and it does what you did, what you need, you know. So it's a nice option for people to use that.
Yeah, John, you mentioned Plex, and that's kind of come back, and at least in the forefront of my mind. A couple of weeks ago, Dave had Richard
Gunther
on the podcast, and he's talking about all kinds of media things. And I'm not sure he got into Plex, and that kind of showed up in the Home Server Show, the forums of, hey, what about Plex? Christian, are you guys? I know you're Subsonic users. Have you guys tried Plex on your side?
Nah, we're Mad Sonic, Subsonic all the way.
Okay. All right, Andrew, have you tried Plex at all?
Yeah, I did, and I went back to Nero Home Essentials, I think, which is the one that came with the LG TV.
Okay.
Does anyone actually use that?
What? What's that? Use what?
The Synology thing? Or not the Synology.
The Plex thing?
No, what Andrew just said. Nero.
Oh.
Yeah, look, for me it just works. And on version 1 Home Server, it's a lot faster than any of the stuff that needs Java or any of that type of thing. So, but at the moment, given my home server so broken, I think I'm just using the direct media sharing.
Is that a microserver you have behind you there, Andrew, in the box still? Right, no other side.
That box?
Yeah.
That's an RMA from Seagate that I still haven't taken out of the box.
I thought maybe you had bought a microserver and you just hadn't got to it yet so that you could join the rest of us with 2011.
No, the microserver's been sort of on the list and I just haven't gotten
to it. You haven't had time. You've been doing other things. Christian, I know you are getting ready, speaking of media, you are getting ready to depart for school again. I'm sorry, for summer intern. Ship again away from home, so you'll be a distance away. What have you set up this year from a consumption perspective on your home server or that server environment that you have that's different from last year? What kind of new things have you put in?
Yeah, so actually OwnCloud was one of the big things because I really wanted to. I'm kind of starting to transform my model of how I have my data on the internet and kind of. Whether it's social media or files or websites, you know, I have a lot of stuff out there. All of it's secure, but I really needed to start changing my model for security. So actually, the work that we did with Twitter during the week was an example. How I structure my other, photo accounts, sharing. So getting all of my data off things like Dropbox and stuff was really a goal for me in April that I took care of, and that was answered with OwnCloud. Server 2012 Essentials answers some of the security issues with, it's not really a security issue, but secure networking and ease of use with the automatic VPN that's set up with 2012 Essentials so that I can be using our own internet gateway for traffic if I'm in a public location. Making sure everything as much as possible is over secure HTTPS, so setting up things like Facebook and Twitter to force SSL connections, setting up home server and remote desktop connections to all be SSL. In terms of file storage, the home server RAID is really still the main construct in that regard. I use a combination of the VPN and the remote access features of 2012 Essentials to get into my desktop because there's a lot of things I have custom configured on this desktop that has been like this for years that I need to have in that exact fashion. So that's really helpful. And I'd say overall, those are really kind of the core things that I need to be able to do. I need to be able to get in my PC when there's stuff on here that's different from...
Because you're planning to leave the PC set up and running at the house.
Right.
So you're taking a laptop with you.
Yeah, I'm almost using my laptop as like a thin client in some regards. Not obviously not mainstream, but for many cases where I'm going back for files and that kind of stuff. Definitely using it like what you would expect from a thin client. And then really, that is kind of everything I need. The only other optional thing that I'm working on trying to reset back up is actually it's my next project, because I want to be able to have my Verizon Fios HD television go with me wherever. And the one problem I had with this the last time I set it up was I used the HD Home Run to basically establish a UDP VPN that would allow me to connect to that box and open up Windows Media Center on my laptop to get it. And it worked for standard def all right, but HD, it wasn't really having that great of a day. So what I'm going to do before I leave, hopefully, is set up a Linux installation of MadSonic, SubSonic, whatever you want to call it, and then use the JW player to actually pick up on the streams coming off of the HD Home Run, so that basically you type in the channel number into SubSonic or into MadSonic, and then you're streaming in HD your Verizon Fios TV service over the internet. So then you're past that VPN limitation, and you then have access to adjust your bit rates, which will allow you, no matter where you are, to be getting your HD Fios TV package on the go.
Andrew, were you able to take advantage of that same technology?
Yeah. At one stage, we did a bit of a test, and Christian created me a profile on their home server, and I VPN'd into the house and installed the home server, the HD Home Run driver, and could watch US TV via Media Center.
Is that legal?
Don't think it's illegal, is it?
I actually don't think it is, because you're networking in... No, it's not, because your cable card TV is licensed. So if you're giving someone access to your own network, they're considered inside your home. It's not like you're opening up a uTorrent or opening up a download link or live streaming. SubSonic is a private media service, and VPN is certainly... I'm not handing out free VPN licenses to our internal network. Right. I'll give you that. So. Right. 100% legal, especially because nothing is being recorded or dumped or what have you. So, yes.
Okay. That sounds cool. Michael Martis just jumped in chat, and he was wondering what number we were on. And I forgot that I named the show the 10 things, something like 10 things you didn't know about or whatever. 2012 Essentials. I was just trying to draw you in, Mike. So if you came out to hear the 10 things, we never started with one. We just started talking to Zadler, and away we went. So anyways, if you are joining us for the first time, we had a bunch of guests come in tonight off of YouTube. If you're joining us for the first time, Home Tech Podcast, actually the conversation's going on right now over at theaverageguy.tv/live, and there's a live stream chat window. You can just jump in there. A bunch of guys in there right now. And you can jump in for chat, and we'll welcome you over there. John, you had mentioned just a second ago, John Zadler, you had mentioned that are you running Plex on a Raspberry Pi? Is that right? Or XBMC?
Yeah, I'm running Plex on my Windows Home Server version 1, which is on the EX470. So, I got that installed there, and then through a web browser on my PC, I can, look in, and it's a very nice graphical interface of, it tells you, what's the latest episode you have, and, it kind of tells you, what's on deck, like what you should watch. Like, let's say if you watched, I don't know, episode 10 of Survivor, and then, once you finish that one, then 11 will pop up. It'll tell you, like, that's the next one you should watch it. So sometimes, if you're jumping from program to program, you don't know where you are. Plex will help you manage it. So that's, and like I said, it's also a nice graphical interface. Then the other option that I've been playing around with is running the XBMC, which is a RASP, they call it RASP BMC for the Raspberry Pi. Yeah. And, because I actually have my TV, I have a high-definition TV, but it's like 10 years old, so it's component video. It's not HDMI. But my brother just recently, he says, you know what, I'm going to go buy this 40-inch. I love this guy. He goes and buys himself a 40-inch TV. He says, I'm going to bring it to your place. He says, I'm going to try it out there. And, we're going to use it for a week or two and see, what it does, like the resolution. And it's Samsung Smart smart TV. So it's got a bunch of add-ins, like, you know, basically, you know, stuff that you can, you know, hack into it. So he's like me, a hacker. So since it has a HDMI, and so we decided we're going to connect the Raspberry Pi to it. Because one of the things with the using the Pi is the audio. If you want some good audio, the Raspberry Pi only outputs in stereo, like it's a mono jack, a 3.5 millimeter jack. So either you get your audio that way, which is not won't be surround sound, or you get it through the HDMI cable, which again my TV is component. So, but the new monitor is HDMI and it supports, you know, the you know, now all the TVs support the audio through the HDMI cable. And then the other thing with using the software, this version of the XBMC, is that there's a thing called CEC, which is basically you're using your remote from your TV to control the UI of XBMC. So when you want to scroll left and right or go to, you know, click on the, you know, one of your TV shows, you don't have to go and use a remote dedicated, you know, for the Raspberry Pi. You can use your remote that is that came with the TV, because that now that's all built on into the cable. So imagine, like, the technology is that HDMI cable is bringing the video, it's bringing you the audio, and it's bringing you the keystrokes of where you are on the controller. So it makes for a nice interface. So XBMC is one of the selections. Yeah,
pretty cool. Gary's out there trying to broker free TV service for a Christian tuition college fund. So that, if that's not questionable. Christian, any other tech that you're using as you head off here in the next couple of weeks? Stuff that you didn't have access to last year that you're using this year?
My pride and glory. The Samsung Galaxy Note 2.
Yeah, so you're on a Note 2. You just upgraded to a Note 2. And Andrew, aren't you on an S4 at this point?
Yeah, I got an S4. My S3 decided to die a couple weeks back. And
those are basically the same, right? Christian, your screen's just a smidge bigger, right?
Mine's 5.5 inches, and the S4, I think, is...
Not that we're comparing sizes or anything like that.
Yeah, mine's 5 inch quad core.
Okay. And you're a 5.5, yeah. Christian? Okay, yeah. So half an inch. So let's get off that discussion. So
what's half an inch between friends?
I'm getting really uncomfortable. But they're basically, they're very, very similar phones. Christian, how has that changed things for you? And I know you said you could talk a whole show about this, but maybe we'll save it. But give us a few highlights of how this has changed for you.
Completely transformative from the Touch Pro 2, which was the dead okay, right? So
you were always
technology
back,
jump, but
huge technology jump.
Yeah, I really like the fact that it still fits in my pocket, but the screen is really large and gorgeous. Really nice for reading, seeing news. The sharing on here is fantastic. It's got a really, really fantastic camera. I almost am inclined not to take cameras on my normal camera anymore, because this just takes such nice HD photos and video. And the sharing up to Facebook, Google Plus, whatever is really great.
Super fast too.
Yeah. I love having the Google account back up the entirety of the phone, so that if this thing ever decided to crap out, I could just restore my entire phone to it. That's really awesome. People might get a little security weird on that, so I actually have 2-factor authentication set up on my Google account, which I think is so important, because not only do I have my phone wired right into it, but I have my Gmail in there, I have my Google Plus in there, I have all my website analytics, webmasters tools. I mean, I got a lot of stuff on Google, so I got to be careful about. So 2-factor authentication has pretty much become a must. It's really not a pain. People always think, oh, it's all this extra security I don't need. It's really not like that, because once you get your devices set up that you're using all the time, you're not running into it until you have a new device come on your grid, which is the whole point of it, right? So that's been really great. Like I said, streaming Subsonic straight to the car through the Bluetooth is nice.
Yeah, let me ask you about that real quick. So what I want you to focus on is, since we're talking Windows Home Server tonight or those technologies, what are you accessing on your phone that's calling back home to get the data? So you said Subsonic, you're streaming Subsonic, right? That's data that lives at the house. It's going over the internet and back down to your phone, right? And you're streaming it that way?
Yeah, I'll be honest. That's pretty much the only thing where I'm taking something off the server. Everything else is pretty much me using the phone to generate data, not to retrieve it. If I need to retrieve it, really most of what I'm doing on my phone is internet accessible.
Sure.
And one of the nice things will be once I'm down in Virginia, Sprint has all their 4G already set up here, set up down there, whereas where I'm at right now, it's still 3G.
3G, and a very bad implementation of 3G.
Yeah, and they're quoting, apparently, in theory, in the world of theories, 4G in July, but, I mean, they've been saying that for a long time, so. Yeah.
I don't trust Sprint anymore, and I'll be a lifelong Sprint customer just because they're cheap and they're unlimited and, you know, blah. I've been with Sprint forever, but they're terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So from a music standpoint, are you, when you go to consume media, is it all Subsonic all the time? Is that pretty much since you have your whole music collection?
On my phone, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you're streaming music from the home server or the servers at home, let's just call them that, through Subsonic and listening to that wherever you're at.
Yeah.
Is that an LTE device, your one, or is it CDMA?
It's both, Sprint. Because with Sprint, your 3G is CDMA and your 4G is LTE. And
so it's got a SIM card in it, though, yeah.
You sure that's LTE?
This
and
phone,
WiMAX?
Yeah, this phone is LTE.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
One of these guys?
That's a good question. I
don't think it does.
I don't think so, but I know it uses CDMA for 3G.
Yeah, no, yeah, okay. It does. Yeah, it does not, Andrew.
Okay.
Now, you know, Sprint's only good here in the U.S. for the most part. You know, my Sprint phone doesn't work. Went to Germany. You can't even make it work.
Actually, phones like the iPhone on Sprint is international. The iPhone 5.
Does it have the right stuff for it? Yeah, I don't want to turn this into a phone conversation too much, but... real interested. How else has there anything else where that's really changed your workflow from what you do? I mean, certainly taking pictures is better. You know,
sharing is a whole lot better. Yeah, sharing is really huge. And it sounds really terrible, but coming off that crappy Windows phone, having an app store that is actually
that actually has something in it
is really amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also messaging. I use Google Talk on here and Skype Video a lot, and they both work really well. So
yeah, you know what's really good on both the S2, S3, S4, and I imagine on both the Note 1 and 2, doing a Google Hangout on those, the microphones are really, really good.
Yeah.
In fact, I was Skyping, or I was doing a Hangout with a guy the other day in Seattle, and about 10 minutes into the conversation, I said, where's your microphone? You know, are you on a new, you know, are you on a nice mic? And he's like, no. And I'm like, well, what are you using? He's like, I'm using my phone. And he just set the phone up on the, you know, on a ledge or something when he was doing it. And the sound quality was just as good, at least as I was hearing it, just as good as this microphone that I have here.
Yeah.
So it was just dynamite.
Yeah.
The only complaint I have about Hangouts on Android is my Bluetooth earpiece, which I use for podcasting and pretty much lives on my ear 24/7. It doesn't, for some reason, the device won't use that mic and earpiece while I'm in a hangout, which means that, like, the one I think I joined a home server show hangout from the car one day driving home.
Or tried to, yes.
Yeah, tried to, and I had to rely on the speaker and the phone and the microphones in the phone to be able to join in.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't found that to be very successful at all. I use my earbuds. If I'm in the car and I'm going to try and do hangouts, not that I'm looking at the screen or anything like that, but
yeah, never.
Earbuds are just the way to do it for me. You know, that seems to work best. Well, anyways, I'm going to cut that conversation off because we'll talk phones all night. John, as we just crossed over the hour mark, I wanted to see if you had anything else from a home server, Windows Server 2012 Essentials perspective that you wanted to cover.
You put in the show notes there, and it came out in the forums there about some guys were saying about the light being too bright on the micro server.
Oh, yeah. I did put that in there, yeah. I kind of was joking about it this week, and I put in the forums, hashtag first world problem, you know, that or really we're going to complain about a light that's too bright. What you're referring to this. Let's see if I can. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, that one.
That light right there, right? That one?
That's right.
It is big and blue, and there was some discussion in the forums about, you know, okay, cut it, duct tape it, electrical tape over it. And maybe this is a good discussion to have with Christian as we talk about the – certainly that light is a health indicator. I didn't realize that. It is a health indicator, and it turns amber if the PC is having problems. And so if it's turns colors and it's got some intelligence to it, there must be something on the board or there must be a way to control that light. I guess that's where I wanted to go with this discussion. John, you might wanted to add something else and I cut you off, but – that was I'd put that in there because I was wondering, is that available somewhere to control? Can you?
Yeah,
control?
Well, that's a built-in. From what I know, is it's not. If it was a regular light, then I would say, you know, just cut one of the leads, put in a diode, because a diode will usually a diode will drop the voltage 1.5 volts for every diode you put in series. So depending, you know, and then so it'll drop the brightness. But the thing is, it's you know, because it changes color, it's probably an LED. And the LED, you know, they work on a certain range. Let's say it'll work from 4.7 volts to 5.5 volts. And if you give it less voltage, it'll just turn off. So there is no control of that. And depending on the way the LED works is, you know, they want to save money, right? They don't want to put three lights in there. So they have one LED, and if the current is positive, negative, the light will be green. If they reverse the polarity, the light will be red. If they alternate the polarity, then it'll go yellow. So as far as, you know, changing the colors, like trying to put something in there to make it less brighter, I think the nail polish will trickle work, maybe.
Just cover it. Well, I was hoping maybe you could control it. You know, somewhere on the board where you could get in there and maybe add a driver to it or have some kind of control over it. But no?
I don't know.
It's got to be coming off the board.
See, the MediaSmart server, they had LEDs in the cases that changed color, and you could go in there and change the brightness of them.
Yeah.
So, you know.
With that little Easter egg that would make the lights flash and that kind
of
stuff.
You're going way back for that one.
Yeah. Yeah,
I remember back in the day they had Easter eggs on the
Christian. Any thoughts on that? You originally wrote the BIOS hack for that, or BIOS mods supports the BIOS hack for that, and you had a good look inside that. Any thoughts on that?
This is for the NL40 or for the?
Well, I imagine the architecture is the same for the 36, the 40, and the 54. Along that light is probably in the same, has the same control.
Yeah, I remember on the. EX45, there used to be a driver that you could compile in Linux for C, I want to say, and it would let you do all these Easter egg shows and different colors and lights on the front. So sounds like it's possible, but it's that just demonstrates you could control the lights and all sorts of different functionality. The BIOS, gosh, the onboard LEDs. Some BIOSes do have those settings, but it's hit or miss.
I was just thinking, if it's smart enough to know that something's struggling, right? I mean, it'll go amber if the board is having a problem. There would have to be some kind of control over it, right? And I don't. That's as much as I know.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Good work, Jim.
Way to go.
Goodness.
let me drink some more. Right?
I mean, really, that's something that should be controlled more on the driver end. The lights on the front of the box should be more driver driven.
Yeah.
And I know, like on the EX45, they had a driver that they installed with that was HP controlled. Definitely possible to do at the BIOS level, but probably really want to do it at the
driver level.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, that makes sense. I was just kind of wondering if So if I was going to write, so you're saying someone would have to write a driver to control that. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Andrew, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, maybe you could put maybe a variable resistor into one of the legs of the LED, potentially.
Yeah.
And that way you can turn it up and down.
Yeah, just and then run that little switch out to the front, Dremel it in, put a little switch in there, and then just turn that thing on.
I'd put it out the back of the box in one of the blanking plates.
Huh? Okay.
That way you don't have to see it from the front.
Yeah, true. I was just thinking for easy control, you know, if you wanted to do that. So it was an interesting home.
Ghetto for my liking.
Well, it was an interesting home server post because we never really talk about that stuff very much, and it was one of those interesting posts that I thought, yeah, at first I kind of, I'll admit, and if you're listening to this show and you're the one that wrote the post, I'm sorry. I kind of was a little cynical about it at first. I'm kind of like, come on, are you kidding me? It's a light, you know? But it is in the dark if you have it in your room, and it is bright. I mean, when it gets dark down here, it illuminates down here in the studio. So it, I could see how that would be bright. There are some, you know, somebody said duct tape would take care of it, and it absolutely would, so. Yeah.
On my DX4000, there's, you know, each one of the hard drives has a little blue light. And let me tell you, when the lights in the room are turned off and that drive is, you know, he decides he's going to start moving some files around, those four lights, they're blinking. It's bright. It's crazy. And some guys also refer to, like, the lights on the back of some of those Sans Digital external USB drives. You know, they have a fan in the back with a light in it. It lights up the house, you know, like that. It's like, it's just a light in a fan. But it, like, you see the whole wall, it shoots out there. Yeah. And it's like, holy mackerel, how can you turn that
lights,
stuff down?
So, lights things up for sure. Christian, anything else you want to cover?
No, that's it from Christian's corner.
All right. Andrew, we haven't seen you in a while. Anything you want to bring into the podcast before I get to the show wrap?
No, I guess it's really just what would people replace a version 1 home server with at the moment.
Yeah, well, I think at this point, you know, if you're the question is what are people replacing Windows Home Server version 1 with?
Yeah.
And I think if you're a peruser of the Home Server Show forums, if you haven't been out there before, homeservershow.com/forums, really good group of guys, well moderated, very nice place if you have some questions about putting a server in your home. We talked about, of course, the Windows Home Server is dominated, but there's other topics that go on out there as well. You know, I think the consensus is right now, if you go back to BYOB, and Mike Martis, help me, what was your last episode? Throw that in chat here, where you guys talked about walking through the process of choosing what kind of storage you would need. Kevin Schoonover was on that as well. Somebody throw that in chat. So if you go back to BYOB, and I'll wait here for that, but these guys get together and talk about that question. So that might be if you're interested in thinking about that. And one of the things that came up is, what's your storage need, right? I mean, what do you really need to, you know, what? And I think if you are, you know, if you're 2 terabytes and under and you don't have, you don't have a lot of data and you're looking for something that'll back up your PCs, or you maybe have a couple PCs in the house and you want to keep it kind of simple and you want to kind of keep it cheap. And Gary just threw the URL off of Newegg for Windows Home Server 2011, which is $50 at this point. It's not very expensive. It's easy to buy and it goes nicely on a microserver. I mean, we've sold a boatload of those things. Kind of wish I was making commission off the microserver bandwagon. We have, as a community, I think, have sold out HP on those things at times. So, of course, John Stutzman is our resident expert and just posted some performance comparisons between the N40 and the N54 and is looking at some comparisons between the 54 and the new G8, the spec that may be coming out here for that. So, Andrew. I mean, I think if your data needs are less, I think a lot of folks are looking at 2011 from a cost perspective. Christian and Gary have gone Windows Server 2012 all the way in their environment, and of course it's another way to do it. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, part of me saying microserver with RAID 1 250s for the operating system and RAID 1 2 3 terabyte for the data, so that I've got redundant disk across the board.
Yeah, and you know what? There's Windows Home Server 2011 has that 2 terabyte limit on a backup, right? But that's so easy to overcome now with cloud backup, right? So. You might not have it local,
cloud's not free in Australia.
No, that's true. Yeah. So you don't move it all up at once, right? But you can move it up over time.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. I mean, so.
Yeah. And I guess with especially with Box, you get so much more data available in Box. Although, I mean, my Dropbox at the moment's up to 80 gig or 100 gig or something. So.
Really.
I guess the bonus of having, you know, 2 Samsung phones in the last year, you get 50 gig with each phone. So.
Yeah. Unboxed for sure. And actually, copy.com was running a deal. I put this out at the Facebook page, so facebook.com/group/theaverageguy. You could get in. I got in on the beta, and I got 100 gig for jumping in on the beta. And then even if you jump in now, it's 15 gig, and they'll give you 5 gig for a referral. And so I put that note out, and I got 35 gig of referral space that I get to keep forever like that. So I'm up to 135 gig on copy.com from cloud. And I'm kind of like, you know, at the end of the day, the question is how much cloud storage space do you need, you know, for those kinds of things? I use CrashPlan here in the U.S. at 60. Andrew, is CrashPlan available to you guys there in Australia?
Yeah, it's available to us, but again, you know, if you get metered on upload, it sort of tends to kill your bandwidth real quick.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You got to manage your space. John, you're restricted too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got some caps.
You have caps. You know, you have to pay, so there's no unlimited.
Christian, any FiOS caps?
Actually, we were just talking about how FiOS has been consistently across the U.S. giving 8 more up than what you pay for. So if you get 35/35, you're going to get 43/35. If you're paying for 50/50, you're getting 58/50. And that's been everywhere we've tested it. It's always 8 more down than what you're paying for.
That's nice that they're over delivering, right? Under promising and over delivering.
Yep.
On that for you. Yeah, and I can't complain either. We're 60 up, or we're 60 down now and almost 15 up, and I pay $60 a month. And it's unlimited, but I keep getting letters saying, hey, you know, your plan is really only, you know, and we're not going to do anything, but that's just your plan. So I'm fully expecting them to
rebel,
cut me off at some point. Go, no, you're done. Collison, you're done. Get out of the pool. So. One of the other things I've been working on, I've been posting a few notes on this over at the homeservershow.com and on Facebook. No, not too much on Facebook, but I just built this. I got this Dell Precision Workstation 690 that Kevin Schoonover was nice enough to send me 32 gig of RAM for that he had just laying around in his basement that he was able to send to me, and I got that fired up and actually installed Hyper-V on it. And that had been my first install. I installed Windows Server 2012 standard and then enabled the Hyper-V role. And I hadn't done that before. And I was kind of doing a test to see how difficult is this for the average guy. So I didn't ping anybody in the community. I didn't, you know, get on the line with Christian and say, all right, help me set this up. I just said, okay, I'm going to try and do this just from documentation that is available straight on the web, and I'm not going to ask anybody any questions. I'm not going to ping anybody. And so in about 30 minutes, it was set up. It was super setting up the Hyper-V role on, and in fact, setting up Windows Server 2012 standard was super simple, right? I mean, it basically runs for the most part out of the box for me. It was on, working great, worked great. Then I waited. I did some updates. I let it go for a week, and then I came back and did the Hyper-V role, and got Hyper-V up. And if you've used, if you're the average virtualization guys, and by the way, over the next couple of weeks, we're going to be talking about virtualization, so this will be a little bit of a teaser for it. But certainly, I'm not the expert at all on this. We'll have some guys. And Jay Moore, I hope you're listening. You have not responded to my prompt to join their show. So Jay, I want you on a show, but we're even going to try and get the BYOB guys out to talk about their virtualization setups. But setting up the Hyper-V role and getting a getting an actual, I did Windows 7 as the guest. Super simple, and if you've used VirtualBox, it looks almost identical. I don't know who copied who, but they are very, very similar in their setups. And so it just was in and set up, and I think it's almost easier than VirtualBox. And I've always touted that VirtualBox for the average guy is the easiest way to go when it comes to setting up virtualization guests. And so, you know, my assessment is, man, that is an average guy project. I really do think if you can get big enough box with enough processing power, and I don't think it takes a ton. You know, the box I bought is a dual Xeon box, and Gary, I got a better deal on that though than you did. I just want to let you know it was $25 for that box, dual Xeon. He'll appreciate that. Super easy to set up. So if you are at all questioning, if you're listening to the show and you're like, oh, I'm not a tech guy, I can't do that. You know what? You can. It's not that hard. I read a few articles and followed the instructions, and it was super simple and easy to set up. Christian, are you guys running Hyper-V in your environment? Any virtualization stuff?
Jim, you are having selective amnesia tonight.
No, I'm running a show where I'm being the host. Christian, what have you guys set up?
We have a Hyper-V on our 2008 R2 box, the only R2 box that we run that's non-2012. And that runs one subsonic virtual server and one 2012 standard server that runs our SharePoint installation.
Cool. Yeah. So you got some stuff running there, and you'll get a chance to chime in as we talk about virtualization here in the next couple of weeks. I've gotten a lot of positive comments back from folks. Looking forward to hearing that. So join us over the next couple of weeks. Of course, we're always live Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, and over the next couple of weeks, we'll be doing that as well. So a super easy setup. The other thing I wanted to share with you, last week, if you were on the show, we were talking about laptops, and it was a super long show. We actually got two out of it. We got a Rich's Random podcast out of the whole thing because we went an hour in the post show, and the stuff was so good that we decided to just make a podcast out of it. So if you haven't subscribed to Rich's Random Podcast yet, you might want to. Head over to theaverageguy.tv/live, and we've got all the links over there to subscribe to his random podcast generator. But I did end up buying, Mike Martis talked me into buying this Asus Vivo. I think that's how you pronounce it. It's the Asus mm-hmm. Vivo Sonic Master Core i3 Touch, Windows 8 Touch enabled. Really nice laptop, $399 from Amazon. Did you see? Oh, it didn't. Hold on. Let me see if that. Starts up real quick. Touchscreen Windows 8. I've really liked this box here, this laptop. So I actually bought it. I'll have to Drashna's telling me to don't forget to do Start 8. I don't get tied up too much on the start screen with it. And so it's working great for me, but $399 on Amazon. It would gone up to $425 when I checked today, but this was a recommendation from Michael Martis, and it has been a great little laptop. I just got it I ordered it Thursday at the end of the show. It came Tuesday at work with Amazon Prime shipping, and it's been a good little laptop. I've been working on it all week, and if you're in the market for something inexpensive, super light, 500 gig hard drive, fast enough, although if I put an SSD in there, it might be even faster. It definitely would boot back. I put it in hibernation, so it's taking a second for it to come back. But a good little laptop. And if you didn't get a chance to hear that show, go back to theaverageguy.tv/HT117. In fact, I've been going back and redoing all the podcasts from the very beginning and adding the HT search capability to them. So HT stands for home tech. And then so now you can, if you go to theaverageguy.tv, search HT005. Say you wanted to go back to show number 5. By the way, Andrew, it was show 11 that we brought you on. I just saw that special guest, Andrew Morris. Andrew's been on since show number 11. I've been going back and updating all those posts as well so that search feature will work on. Because let's face it, WordPress search is not very good. I don't know why. It should be better than it is.
It's pretty crappy, isn't it?
It's pretty crappy. Yeah, that's not going to show real well, but you can see that's touchscreen. Okay, so I just wanted to update you on that as well. Good little laptop. Michael Martis, thank you for the recommendation on that. And I We'll post that in the show notes if you want to go out and see what that is. It's still available, and a good little laptop. I think eventually I might put a Mike says I told you. Yeah, no, great recommendation. It was really good. He had mentioned that, and I just at the end of the show, I don't even think we were recording at that point. I said, okay, I took my wallet out and we bought it. So good stuff, Mike. Thanks for the recommendation on that. If you want to buy something from Amazon and you want $100 credit to do that, we have $100 just sitting around waiting for you to claim it. All you got to do is join us over at the Facebook page. So facebook.com/group/theaverageguy. Join us there. Tell your friends. Right now we're a little bit south of 175. When we hit 250 folks in there, all 250 will be put in a hat. I did do a beer burp. Sorry, John. we'll put it's really good Shock Top. Have you guys had this Shock Top? It's like apple. It's just delicious. Okay.
I drink.
It's delicious. very delicious. Tastes like apple juice. We're giving away $100. So all the names go in there, and we will draw for that. You could win to join us. A bunch of you have come over. So join us, facebook.com/group/theaverageguy. Join in there, and we'd love to have you in there. And some great conversation going on and all a part of what we do. Also, I've been trying to get you guys to subscribe to the podcast as well. And, of course, if you are looking for – most of you guys aren't, but maybe if you're listening to the recorded version, you're on the site listening to it, you're brand new to us. We have all the links to subscribe to it either through iTunes or Zune or whatever RSS feed, maybe Beyond Pod on Android, maybe – you've podcasts on a Windows phone, any of those, all those things are available and easy to do. You can find us in all those communities. Just search Home Tech and add us and make sure you don't miss a show each week. It's an easy way to get it. If you don't have time, just skip one or two, but at least they'll either automatically download or like on Stitcher, you can just watch them, or I'm sorry, you can just listen to them automatically. I just saw this week that Stitcher just launched a new app for Android that's completely hands-free. It's designed kind of to put your phone up and it's super easy to navigate around in Stitcher. It's meant for the car. You know, Stitcher's really trying to get their way into vehicles. I think they might be the premier, internet radio, so to speak, player that we're going to see here in the future. And so if you're on any of those, it's all available out there at The Average Guy, and you get that done. Of course, we're on YouTube. You're probably watching us there right now. And don't forget to join us on Facebook. If you are buying from Amazon, the way we can give away $100 on an Amazon credit is that when you buy things from Amazon and you buy them through our site, we take a little bit of commission on that. Head out to theaverageguy.tv/Amazon or amazon.theaverageguy.tv. Either one of those will get you there, and that will send you through, and we make a few cents when it's done. And then the very last thing before you go, don't leave yet. Andrew Hunt and I have been doing a financial tech podcast, literally 10 minutes of your time each week. Head over to theaverageguy.tv and look up financial tech. And Andrew's just on fire these days with financial advice, and so you want to head out there and have a listen to that 10 minutes of your day. You can just listen to it in the browser. Good stuff. All right. Let's wrap this for the evening. I think we're all done here. We'll stay around for a post show. If you're listening to the recorded version of this, you'll never get the post show because you have to be here for that. So come out and join us live Thursday nights, or in Andrew's case, Friday at noontime. And you know what, Andrew? I sent out the invite this week. I spammed a whole bunch of people more and said, hey, join us for Home Tech. I got a couple folks from Australia that said, no, I just can't make it in the middle, in the middle of the, and I'm like, yeah. Dude, one of our guys is from Australia. He makes it. Rennie makes it every week. What kind of lame excuse is that, Australia?
Yeah, I know. Get with the program.
Yeah. Just look, it's at lunchtime, right? You're in the Eastern time zone of Australia, right?
Yeah, that's right.
It's around your lunchtime, right? Take a lunch break. Listen to us live. Australia, come on. I challenge you. Jump in there. Right now, it's all these U.S. folks. They're all just kind of taking over the chat. Represent Australia. Jump in. Now, the European guys, I can understand. It's the middle of the night in the U.K. and in Germany right now. But certainly in Australia, you guys can join us. We'll be back next week talking virtualization. We'll have all kinds of cool stuff wrapped up and ready for you. Thank you, John Zadler, for coming out tonight and being the home server MVP that you are. Appreciate that, Christian. Congratulations on the completion of your academic K-12 era there in Buffalo. And we look forward to following you as you make your way to your summer internship. Andrew, I'm glad you could break away, get a little break from the kids and come in.
Me too. It's all good.
All right, guys. We'll catch you back next week. Thanks for coming out. Good night.